Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this down track.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot delta H. Goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Delcom.
Go.
Jinsey.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang.
Oh my goodness, it's a special show tonight.
It is, it's a special show. It's all about my friend, Bigfoot.
Yeah, and I'm broadcasting from, not quite from the gold country, I'm actually aboard the deck of the mighty Queen Mary out here in Long Beach, California. Had a heck of a good time getting internet connectivity out in this place. It's positively an adventure. But we managed to do that, and
that's right.
I was able to get connected up, and Kat's here working with me, as always, from Puyallup River Valley, Washington. And yes, it would have been too easy to do a ghost show on the Queen Mary, but we decided to go with Bigfoot, which was a good thing, because a lot of folks are interested in this guy. And he's seen in your state and out here in my state and, California. And all over, so we've got quite a community very interested. There's some interesting stories that Miss Kat here has had personal sightings of this creature twice, I believe you've said.
That's right.
And I have a family story to share about an experience that my grandfather had that was not quite the most peaceful of encounters, and we'll bring that up a little later in the show. We also have let me pull up my notes here. We have a guest coming in from the Minnesota. Where was this? His name is Elusive One, and he's with Kat. Can you give me that name there? I don't have it right now.
This is our friend Elusive One, and he's with the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team.
Yeah, there it is. I just found it. I scrolled down. I had my notes put in the wrong place here. Still getting used to broadcasting on the road. Yeah, and this gentleman is running a pretty good-sized little group here over there in Minnesota, and has had a number of interesting encounters. From what I can see here in the show notes, he's found footprints, tree signs, and stick formations, a number of deer kills, and even what he says is a vocal encounter with Bigfoot.
Right.
So that that's going to come along at the 30 minutes past the hour. We're going to have him on to talk about his cases, and also we'll be opening up the chat line, which will be if you want to dial in with to talk about your cases afterwards. It'll be 646-478-0377 to talk about your cases and things that you've encountered out there in the wilderness that might be 8 feet tall, hairy, and 900 pounds. So if you've got a little time to talk to us about that and towards the latter half of the show, we'll be more than willing to listen. So that said, let's get started with the normal format here, which is to kind of take a look around and see what's happening in the world of the paranormal. And what we're going to do is feature a story that Ms. Kat found for us, Bethlehem Area News. The Bethlehem Sun Inn is haunted, Lay Valley Paranormal Group says. And the story here is that in Preservation Association founder Yuetta Bender put her heart and soul into saving the Main Street historic site. And some believe her soul still remains in the former 1758 hotel. On a January visit to the inn, a Lay Valley based paranormal investigation group snapped a photo of what appeared to be a woman in a second floor window.
Mm-hmm.
The figure looks to have gray hair, glasses, and to be wearing a white apron. I said, "Oh my God, that's Yuetta," said Bucky, oh God, I won't even try to say this guy's last name, Zaborski. A Sun Inn Preservation Association board member who joined the paranormal group on its investigation. She always wore a white apron, he said. For that to appear at the Sun Inn, it's remarkable. Bender's likeness was far from the only paranormal observation that Lay Valley Research and Investigation into Paranormal Activity group made on its two visits to the inn on January 24th and Saturday, which that's not quite right the way they wrote that, but... The group caught on tape a number of 15 unknown voices, and what they say sounds like a half-hour-long ghost party in the dining room. The group ranks the Sun Inn as among the most, if not the most, haunted places they've ever investigated. Quote, "This place is as active as it gets," says member Jim Fitzgerald, a Whitehall Township resident. The group went room by room on both nights asking if there were any spirits in the inn. They asked about Elizabeth Moore, a nurse who died in 1897 at the inn. And I'm moving to the next page. Here it comes. And when they asked if Elizabeth was there, someone responded with the word Moore, said member Steve Warner of Bethlehem. The response was only heard through audio tape, as were all the other unknown voices, standard EVP stuff here. They played many of these recordings for the media on Thursday, including two instances of a strained voice saying, "We're watching you." And this story is on our website, on the GRI website, so if you want to go there and take a look at this article, it goes on. But we always feature other groups here, reach out to the community, community and let folks know what's going on out there. And so kudos to this group. They're doing great work. And over to a news story from March 2nd of 2009, reports large, hairy, two-legged animal seen. This is in Fairfield, Fairfield, Iowa.
Yep.
It's big, it's hairy, and it's been sighted in Jefferson County. Just don't call it Bigfoot. Okay, let me make this screen a little bigger. I'm not saying that this is what it is by any means. I've just had somebody call this office and report that that's what they've seen, said Sean Moriarty, Operations and Natural Resource Management Manager for the Jefferson County Conservation League. Morrissey had received two reports of a large biped roaming the Skunk River Valley on the eastern side of the county as many years. The first report came during the summer of 2007 and the second during the fall of last year. The most recent caller claimed to have waited several months to contact officials after seeing what he described as a large hairy beast walking on two legs. Quote, "It was pretty washy," Morrissey said. "It's my own personal feeling that they saw something that tricked their eyes and it was a very plausible or explainable animal." Morrissey said the more probable explanation would be that the person saw a horse or a hunter wearing a ghillie suit, a type of camouflage that can look like it's covered in hair. "I'm not going to say that they didn't see something, but I think it's more likely they saw something in a flash or at a strange angle. So this goes on, but interesting to see that these sightings are even going on in, you know, fairly populated areas out in Iowa, in the Corn Belt.
You know, Bigfoot's been seen in all 50 states, including Canada. So
yeah,
for a sighting in Iowa, that doesn't surprise me at all. There's different, in fact, down in Florida, they call him the skunk ape.
Yeah,
so.
I've heard of that, skunk ape, you know, the abominable snowman, Yeti, Sasquatch, Bigfoot. Some folks say, what was it, that one gentleman?
The Indians here call him the boss of the woods.
Boss of the woods.
The boss of the woods.
And hairy folk, you know, so there's all these different names for the same creature. What I do know of it, based on some of the recent, you know, television shows and things like that, are that there appear to be differences geographically from region to region between these creatures. Some are a little bigger, some are a little smaller or thinner, and it does seem like there's some response to the environment that they live in, that the way they, you know, how big they get versus, you know, from one place to another. That said, why don't we move into your particular experience? Now, you related to me and a number of other folks that you, Miss Cat, have actually seen this thing twice. And,
yeah.
In your part of the world there in Washington State. So why don't we start with, you know, in your own words, what happened with your particular sightings?
You know, Washington State is... We've had 800 documented and recorded sightings of Bigfoot up here in the Pacific Northwest. I actually had my sighting back in 1976 over at Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. We used to go up there in the summer. Our family had some friends that had cabins up right off Lake Coeur d'Alene down there by Beauty Bay. And we used to go up there, I was 16 back in 76, and we would go up there, and about a quarter of a mile or so, I'd say, away from where we stayed in the cabins, there was an old summer camp right on the lake, and the cabin frames were still standing with the springs for the beds inside, and it was... If you walked down this trail and all of a sudden it was a clearing, and if you looked down, there was all this blonde grass that used to slope down. And I would guess it to be about waist high. And it sloped down about a 13-degree grade down to the bottom. And then it was up on like this little hump. It was like this little hill. That's where the cabins were. Then right behind the cabins, about 20 feet out, was the shoreline of the lake. And it was really, really hard, like compact clay.
Yeah.
And there was a shelf of it that went out into the lake, and I could wade up to about my shins until it dropped off. And we used to go down there, and it would just basically freak you out because there was woods on either side, and there was just this clearing. And every day that we went there, somebody would grab somebody's hands and ankles, and they'd go one, two, three, and they'd throw them out in the lake, and everybody would run back up this hill and into the woods, because it was kind of freaky to be there by yourself.
Yeah.
And so the day finally came when it was my turn to get thrown out, and I was really very small, about 90 pounds, 5'3", so they really could chuck me out there pretty far, and they did. And then they kind of waited for me to surface to make sure I was okay, and then everybody took off running. They left me my little flip-flop sandals and a towel. And I knew it was coming, so I waded out of the water, and I went up you had to go up around this one cabin, and I was standing up on this little hill. And my dad had always told us what to do if we saw a black bear up there. And he said, stand still and try to stand, you know, downwind from it so it can't smell you. And so I was toweling myself off, and out of my left eye, I saw this looked like a black object. It was about 20, I'm gonna say it was 20 to 30 feet away from me, but it was moving away from me. And so I thought to myself, you know what? I know I can climb on top of this cabin. I know I can get up a tree. I just didn't know because I've never seen a black bear in the wild. And I turned around and I looked at it. And everything was cool until it stood up, and I realized it didn't have claws, it had hands.
Oh,
and it totally stood up, and it turned around, and it looked right at me. And I flipped out, and I figured, okay, if this thing's going to catch me, I'm going to try to at least get away from it. And this thing was huge. I mean, it had legs the size of tree stumps. This thing was just, I don't even know. I went running up the hill. And I bowled over 9 people on this little horse path. About, you
yeah,
know,
motivation.
You know it. It was running like hell, man. I ran all the way to the cabin. I threw open the screen door. I ran upstairs. I got in my bed. I was shaking so hard the bed was bouncing off of the floor. Downstairs, there was total commotion. My dad thought that these guys had done something to me because everybody came screaming in the door after me. Total confusion, total chaos. Nobody knew what was going on. My parents came upstairs. And I know I've talked to you about this before, John. I was telling my dad what happened. And you know what? I'll tell you guys something. For the life of me, I didn't think he was going to believe me. But I told, after stopped being such a blithering idiot, I finally told him what had happened.
Yeah.
And him and the other guys, their friends, they grabbed shotguns and they wanted to go down to see where this thing was. And I didn't want to go. And so after about an hour or so, whatever, of coaxing, I finally I went with them, and one of the guys had actually called the Bigfoot Society, and because I found out later that they had seen this thing before, so they knew what they were dealing with. They just didn't tell me about it. And so we all went back down to the spot, and the Bigfoot Society did actually show up. They took plaster casts of the footprints. And they took the plasters, and then they asked my dad if they could interview me, and because I was only 16, heavily traumatized, and my head kept darting back and forth, and my dad was going, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm looking for this thing." I didn't even know I was doing it.
Yeah,
and so they interviewed me, and
you were in shock.
Oh, yeah. My dad was standing right there watching him do it, you know?
Yeah.
And then my dad and the other guys, I saw them, they were along the shore, and they were jumping up and down on this clay. And I was like, what are you doing, man? Because, I mean, they were, like, hardcore jumping on this stuff.
Yeah.
And my dad was, like, 6 feet tall, and he was, like, 200 pounds, and there was another guy down there who was about 235. And they were wailing on this stuff with their bare feet. And I walked over. I said, "What are you doing?" And he pointed, and he goes, "Look at those." And I looked. And these footprints must have been about 17 inches long. And they were about 3 inches deep in this clay. And my dad and the other guys couldn't even dent this stuff. And they the Bigfoot Society made plaster casts of them. And one of the guys wanted to go after this thing with a shotgun, and his dad looked at him and said, "You're not going anywhere." And
I think a shotgun would be enough for something that big. I just don't.
Well, this thing must have weighed at least 900 pounds if it made 3-inch dents in this clay just walking on it.
Yeah.
And I was looking at these footprints, and
I
know I couldn't even done the splits to equal the distance between these footprints. It was just huge.
Well,
and so I stayed in the cabin for like 3 days. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to leave. I was flipping out. And finally, we climbed in the boats and we went across the lake to this little bistro-type restaurant that is over down by the marina, and my dad brought me a little newspaper, and he said the paper said that 4 other people had seen this thing walking along the shoreline that day. And so I got interviewed for some magazines, and it was in 1976, and I can promise you, I remember it like it was yesterday. It's not something I'm ever going to forget.
You know, that was in what, Eastern Idaho, correct? You know,
it's Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is right on the other side of Washington State.
Okay.
It's the first town you get to, right outside of Spokane.
In the year 2000, I was visiting our family property on the other side of the border over in western Montana. And I was with my cousin, and we decided to go do some little bit of prospecting with metal detectors up in an old miner's cabin about a mile up the hill from our house. And I had a walkie-talkie with me to stay in contact with my father, who was down at our family home.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a long story short, we got up there, walked about a mile, finally found the cabin. And there was, it had all fallen in on itself, and there was a big, giant, basically like a big shrub that's just huge, growing right up out of this thing. And so we walked around, and I walked past a rock that must have weighed 200 pounds that was embedded in the ground, and I'd actually walked on it, and I remember walking on it because I almost fell off of it. And me and Daryl walked around the back side of the cabin, and we heard something, and we couldn't figure out what it was. And when we came back full circle, I looked down on the ground, and this 200-pound rock was flipped over. And Daryl looked at me, and I looked at him, and he says, "Oh, no." And I said, "Oh, my God." And we turned and looked, and we saw something very big and brown just on the other side of the cabin, but we couldn't tell what it was. It was, you know, we thought we were dealing with a grizzly bear. And he said, "What do we do?" And I said, "Stay calm, and let's make for the tree line." So that's what we did. We started putting distance between us and this thing. And the
uh-huh.
thing was, that was funny, was this thing tracked us the whole way, and every time it would try to get close, it always stayed just out of sight. And when I would, I took the action to zigzag our course so I could keep, every time it approached, I would just move farther out and make it have to work to get at us. Like what I was figuring, it was going to try to ambush us. I thought it was, you know, a grizzly bear. Then we kept playing this game with this thing. Got all the way down, and I was in contact on the radio with my father, who brought the truck up down to the foot of this trailhead where we were coming down. And we thought this thing had left, and then suddenly realized that it had swung around to our right and was coming at us from the right and closing the distance. And you could hear it, and you could hear breathing. And it was just really unnerving. And I immediately swung left and started putting distance away again. And that's when we came to the end of the trailhead, and it was just about a 400-foot run down at about a 30-degree angle down the side of this hill. So I looked at Daryl, and we booked it down this hill, told him to run, and we ran and jumped right in the back of the truck. And as we did that, a whole herd of horses from the ranch next door were all spooked and of something up there. They went running right by our truck and right past us and ran straight for their barn. And, you know, I'm still undecided as if this was, you know, a bear, because I don't know what bear would sit there and play games like that with you. It usually will end up being a challenge. And, you know, it's just that part of the world, those sort of things are seen there. So I'm still unsure if I ran into something unknown like Bigfoot, or, you know, or this is a more conventional thing, but I'm really undecided about it. But the thing that bothered me the most, this thing had flipped this rock over, and it looked like it may have been searching for grubs or something, but we never heard it. We didn't hear a thing, you know, so I'm still amazed at this. But I'll relate one more story real quickly. Was my grandfather used to build highways up and down all throughout the state of California, and they spent a lot of time near the area where the Patterson film was made, and a lot of times their construction equipment would be heavily damaged by something, and they would find these prints all over the place, and their equipment torn up pretty bad. But they decided to go hunting one day, and my grandfather never liked having hunting dogs along, but some of his friends brought these dogs, and they bagged a couple of deer, and what they decided to do was to go ahead and, you know, hang them up high so they could keep them away from bears. Well, late in the evening, something came in and was messing around their camp, and so these guys got the bright idea of letting the dogs loose. Well, what ended up happening was all these four or five grown men are, you know, in this camp listening to these dogs chase after something, and they could hear it running. And then suddenly they heard one of the dogs scream and give out a big yip and never was heard from again. And one by one, all of those dogs had suffered the same fate. And what ended up happening was they finally decided to go out there and chase this thing down and see what had happened to the dogs. They got back probably 300-400 yards away from camp, and they were all well-armed. And they found the dogs in pieces hanging 40 feet in the trees.
So, ew!
Yeah. I mean, this thing was serious. So they never did see it, but they packed up that night. They loaded the trucks up, took the meat down, and got the heck out of Dodge. And some of those men would never, ever go back in the woods again. That's an actual true story that my grandfather experienced, and it's been related many times in my family. So
see, that was me. I would not go out of the cabin for like 3 days, and except for the second day we went to the restaurant, but we got in a Bayliner and drove across the lake, and I was with like 15 people, you know.
Yeah.
I was so traumatized by this thing. I was just like staring into the face of a Bigfoot.
Well, hopefully they're not all bad. I think the one, if that's what I was dealing with, I think it was more playing with us than anything else. But I never want to go through that again. You know,
there's
and, I
no
mean,
way
that
that was a bear.
Yeah, it was just very unusual. And I know bears can do a lot of things and do planning, and they think almost like a human being in some ways. But this thing would never let itself be seen. And, you know, my experience with bears, and I have seen them, is that they're not too afraid of letting you see them, you know, unless you're really stalking you. And I didn't feel stalked. What I felt like was I was being observed. So that, you know, we got out of it, but, you know, it's an experience I don't want to repeat. But, hey, we're closing in on the half-hour break, and our guest, you know, from the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Organization will be on here shortly. So we're
That's the elusive
break.
One. He's our guest tonight.
The elusive one. So we're going to take a quick break, about 3 minutes, and we'll be back. So go ahead and listen to this wonderful song about some strange creature of the woods. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Here we go.
That's right.
One day when I was out in the woods, I thought that a walk would feel pretty good. I was on the trail, kicking up at the leaves, digging all the mushrooms and rocks and trees, just gawking at the bugs and the mud and the moss. And that's when I ran into the boss. I call him Bigfoot Sasquatch. He can boogie, he's the boss. See him shuffle, see him sway, stomping and swinging in the Sasquatch way. Boogie, boogie, Bigfoot, boogie now. He's a big old guy, twice as big as a man. He can practically hold you in the palm of his hand. He never takes a bath, he's covered with hair. He's always naked and he doesn't care. But if you're scared of him, take my advice. You know, he smells kind of funky, but he's pretty nice. He's a Bigfoot Sasquatch. He can boogie, he's the boss. See him shuffle, see him sway, stomping and swinging in the Sasquatch way. A boogie, boogie, Bigfoot, boogie now. Big feet while he's doing his shuffle through the boogie beat. He's the caretaker of the deep, deep woods. You know, the forest and the mountain are his neighborhoods. So if you visit there, don't leave your trash behind. And if you meet any critters, you better be kind. He's Bigfoot Sasquatch. He can boogie, he's the boss. See him shuffle, see him sway, stomping and swinging in the sand. its way. A boogie, boogie, Bigfoot boogie now. If you ever do meet him, don't spread it around. Or at least don't tell anyone where you found him. He's not an attention-seeking guy. He's bashful, kind of camera shy. Staying out of sight is what he's got to do, because he doesn't want to end up living in a zoo. He's a Bigfoot Sasquatch. He can boogie, he's the boss. See him shuffle, see him sway. Stomping and swinging in the Sasquatch way. A boogie, boogie, Bigfoot, boogie now. Boogie, boogie, Bigfoot, boogie now.
I love finding songs like that. That took a little work, but you know what? It was worth it.
Oh, man.
Well, hey,
You rule, John. That's it. You rule.
Well, thank you very much, my dear. I've even got a couple of more for different parts of the breaks, but hey, I think we've got our caller in, and we have a couple other callers waiting, I kind of wanted to just let you know we're watching you out there. Just hang on. We're just going to get to our guest, and I think this is him, the last guy that just called in. So, elusive one from the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team. So let me go ahead and answer this.
That's right.
Okay, is this elusive one?
If you're talking to me, it is. How are you guys doing?
Hey, pretty good.
Fine.
All right, you got the right line.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was taking a wild guess at 651 area code was it. So, well, hey, welcome aboard.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John and Tiger Cat. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on as a guest. Whatever you guys need answering with, hopefully I could be of some help.
Okay, well, let's talk about how you got into this. You know, in the bio here, it says that your first encounter was in 2001. So, you know, we might as well just start there.
Well,
maybe
then
you tell us a little bit about that?
Not a problem. Yes, in 2001, first of all, we just Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team just started out with three people, basically. And now we've grown to, well, we lost a member. He didn't die or nothing. He just haven't stayed in touch. He moved on and moved south somewhere. So now we're about four people looking to recruit some more people in the Minnesota area if possible. 2000, I did a lot of researching. Ohio seemed to be a hot spot back in 2000 and 2001. So I did research, found out that Wills Creek was a pretty happening spot. That's in Coshocton County, Ohio. So me and two other of my friends went out there just to see what was happening. And we were in Wills Creek one of the times, in a place called Sasquatch Valley, close to Wills Creek. Went into the woods. My buddy stayed in the car. Me and my other friend walked out of the car down into an embankment. About 50 yards, we got about 50 yards from the car, and about 20, 25 yards from us, we heard a big tree being broken or snapping, just something real loud happening that was out of the ordinary that you usually don't hear in the woods. So we were both were kind of spooked at that time, being, you know, it's our first time going out in the field and research and whatnot. And so, yeah, we got scared, and he grabbed my arm, and my buddy looked at me, and he was ghost. He was really, really pale, white as a ghost. And we both started running back towards the car. So we were running back towards the car. I had on a lot of equipment with me, you know, a Polaroid camera, you know, just some stuff out there, pockets full of whatever I had for equipment. I totally forget. But I stopped and I turned around, looked towards the wooded area where we heard the noise, focused on where the noise was coming from. And, I was waiting to take a picture. Hopefully this thing would step out of the wood line and I could take a picture of this, creature.
Yeah.
Well, as I stopped, my buddy that was up in the car says, "What are you doing? Don't stop. The thing is right behind you." So I looked at him, and his face was dead serious. He looked like he's seen a ghost, too. I mean, he was pale. His eyes were big and round, just like saucers. And he was just in shock. And so I looked at him, and I knew he wasn't kidding around. So I started running back towards the car as well. I caught up with my other friend. That was halfway
through the run kind of moment, huh?
Well, you sound like me bailing out.
I figured if I could outrun him, I'd be safe, right?
Right.
I caught up to him, and it was just, you know, surprisingly, I mean, it was really rainy that time of year in Ohio, and the mud was just piling up and accumulating on the bottom of our hiking boots that we had on, so it was really hard to, you know, get your knees up high enough to keep on running, but eventually I did that, and we hopped in the car. My buddy pointed to the spot, you know, he's like, this thing was moving from tree to tree, coming right after you guys. I did hear the footsteps and everything as it was getting closer to us. Adrenaline takes over your body, and you know, you just become as fast as lightning. We hopped in the car. He's showing me, he's like, it's right over there, you know, that's where it was. It was going from tree to tree, and then we get out of there. We go back to the place where we were camped out yet and talked about it. And, you know, I was giving him 20 questions because I didn't see it personally with my own eyes or my buddy that was right next to my side. But my buddy in the car, he had a higher point of view, so he could definitely see the thing coming, you know, out of the woods, getting closer to us. And he said it was just the fastest thing he's ever seen. It was going from tree to tree, not swinging, but run fast enough and stop and hide behind a tree, then go to another tree and hide behind a tree and just keep on doing that real fast, like zigzagging or in a straight line, going, you know, right for us. You know, and I don't know if it was a bluff charge, a mock charge, or whatever, but if it wanted us out of its area, it certainly did work. Now that I think back on it, if that ever happens again, I'm going to stand my ground, you know, look at it, and maybe, you know, try to communicate with it this time. Because it just reminds me of that movie, Gorillas in the Mist, you know, when they say don't run when you see a gorilla out in the wild, and the first time they did, and you know, that was pretty funny. But this time, you know, I'd like to stand my ground and you know, just see what happens. As a matter of fact, I'm going on an expedition tomorrow morning with a different group of researchers from Minnesota, and we're hopefully going to be getting, you know, some good evidence out there as well. But as far as my story goes, we were out in Ohio in 2001. We got charged in Wills Creek area. We also found an 18-long footprint, about 7 inches wide at the toes, 4 inches wide at the heels. I also seen other little, you know, Bigfoot footprints as well in this kind of ravine creek in a different area, I should also say, but not in the same area. It was in a different area by a lake called Lake Lila or Lake Lydia or Layla or something to that effect. And, you know, it was getting rather late, otherwise... And plus our water supply ran out, or else we were going to go back and cast it. But there was like a little trickle stream going in through that ravine of the valley. And I guess we could have used the water to, you know, make the plaster of Paris cast with and cast that footprint. But all we wanted to do, you know, we were tired from a day's hike, get back to our tent site, have, you know, hot dogs and some pork and beans and a couple beers, talk about what we found, and just relax. Which I really wish we would have gotten out again after we would have ate to cast it, because that night we had a very hard downpour, and of course all the evidence as far as footprints got washed out. But that area of Ohio, Coshocton County, Ohio, Muskingum County, Guernsey County, and Portsmouth, Ohio, are all very, I'd say, superb areas to have a Bigfoot encounter and see Bigfoot signs and evidence.
And so that Ohio is then fairly wooded then. There's definitely forest and that kind of thing for this thing to be able to hide about.
It is definitely wooded. I mean, it's a lot of rolling hills, that's for sure. And the foothills, the Buckeye State and whatnot, there's good Appalachians out there. It's really wooded. I mean, it's just, you know, a lot like Minnesota. It reminds me a lot like Minnesota, but... not as many rolling hills, I should say.
How often are you going out on expeditions? It sounds like you're a fairly active group.
Well, we try to be. I've had an accident back in 2005 at work where a ladder slipped out from under me, and I fell about a story and I broke a bone in my foot. And then the bone was floating around in my foot for about a year before the doctors took it out, creating a lot of tissue and scar damage on the inside. And so they took it out in 2006, and I've been on crutches ever since 2006. So my last, I guess you could say, field exhibition was probably around 05 or 04, and this would be the first one since then.
Well, congratulations for getting back. Oh, I know what you've gone through, because my father had a similar thing where they finally cut this thing out, and it took him 6 months to, I don't think it was as bad as yours, but I remember what he went through. So, you know, hang in there.
Yeah, definitely, you know, that's what I'm doing, is hanging tough and keeping my hopes up. And I'm still want to get out and do what I do and what I love, which is, you know, field expedition, going out there in the field and, you know, getting proof and this thing documented and letting people know that it is a real flesh and blood creature. It is a primate creature, and it does need protection. This is one of North America's only great apes that are native to this land, and they do need protection. Now, what's going to take it, in my mind, is hopefully not a body, but science wants a body. Hopefully we can get other types of evidence, other types of protection. But push comes to shove, science does want a body. And that's sad to say that, but they are smart. They haven't been, you know, there hasn't been a body found. They bury their dead if you're wondering why a body hasn't been found. You can tell the grave site markers by certain tree structures and stick formations. And let me tell you, you don't want to mess with one of those if you want to make it out of the woods, okay?
I mean, hell no. But you know, they've been seeing these large forest apes in Uganda for over 100 years, and they didn't even get discovered until 1950.
Right.
So they existed, but nobody could, like, you know, it's too bad we have to catch them and categorize them and dissect them, and I don't think we're ever going to catch a Bigfoot. So you know what? When I tell my story to people, I know what I'm talking about. I honestly, that's exactly what I saw. And I feel gifted and I feel blessed that I've actually seen one. It scared the crap out of me, of course, when I did, but thinking back on it, I feel blessed that I got to be in the presence of one.
Yeah, I do too. Really, I do.
For real, you know?
If you look at everybody else's experience, I shouldn't say everybody else's, but the majority of 90% of all sightings, people are just shocked and in awe. And they really don't know how to react to their very first sighting. I know I sure as heck didn't when I had that thing chasing me. I know my buddy didn't, you know, how to react when he seen that thing running after me and my other friend down while we were all in the woods, and he had a higher point of view. It really is a blessing, you know, to have these, you know, and they say that Bigfoot will show themselves to you if they want you to see them.
That's
so
right.
It's like you're being shown by these creatures for some reason that they want to show themselves to you.
Well, you know, they have the if I can just bring it up for a sec, the Patterson film.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was just watching Monster Quest today, and they had some experts that were painstakingly taking apart that 983 or 53 frame piece of footage, and
yep,
there's no way that somebody in a suit could have recreated the mouth movements that thing made. The strides, a human being cannot walk like that. They proved it.
Yep, they have.
And they have had claims of people that have said, oh yeah, it was me in the suit.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever come forward with it.
And the guy say that, they did put him in the suit, and he's a shorter guy, and there's no way that he could even match up to the way that creature walked. A very good film documentary was done by Dr. Jeff Meldrum called Sasquatch Legend Meets Science, and they do the locomotion of the Patterson film, and they have a guy that tries to recreate the walk of the creature and the length of the stride along with the height and the movement, and it's physically impossible so far for a human being to create that type of locomotion that the creature did back on October 20th, 1967 in Bluff Creek.
Well, Jordan Konsak and Esteban Sarmento back at the University of Minnesota back in 2004, did an experiment with a model, an athlete, and they had him pose exactly to the film, and the thing that they were stuck on is the knee movement. They could not get this man, for hours, they put little lights on his legs, and they did all this, and he could not duplicate the way this thing walked.
No, not at all. I mean, he was a really big athlete that was
at the University of Minnesota. Did you see that? That was cool.
I did, yeah, with Dr. Esteban Sarmiento. He's a very good primatologist.
He also studies apes in Africa, so he knows the movement.
He actually has been attacked by gorillas in Africa.
The bone structures and everything are so different from what a human would have. That's the part that has struck me with this when I was seeing the Patterson film. It's just it's so completely different than a human walk, and it's so natural the way it does it. And I just couldn't see that a human could match that at all. And that part of the world where that happened, that's the spot my grandfather was working when they were having these construction gear attacks. I mean, these things were taking 55-gallon drums and tossing them like they were just, nothing. Mm-hmm. And tearing the hell out of their construction gears, they were moving, pushing highways right through these territories. So, obviously, they took exception to it, But this is just neat stuff you're doing. Since you've been sick, have you had other people going out for you and bringing in evidence and that kind of thing?
No, I really haven't. The whole team, basically, I'll do the research and everything, and I'll be like, okay, you guys, let's go get suited up. Here's a good area. We're going to go check this out. So they basically followed under me and my research and my findings and whatnot. We're already a group of friends and whatnot, and brothers, I should say, that all have the same interest in this phenomenon. And, I guess... No, to answer your question, no, I don't have other people going out in the group or in my team currently to go out into the field and bring back evidence, but we have had sightings and encounters in Ohio and here in Minnesota as well. So we definitely know that they're around. Just recently, like I said, we were meeting up with going on an exhibition tomorrow morning, actually, with some other Minnesota researchers not a part of the team. One had a sighting back on October 9th of 08 in a wildlife refuge called the Rice Creek Chain of Lakes Park. He's seen a blondish, whitish, a blondish-colored Sasquatch. And he said when he seen it, he automatically felt like he got hit with a stun gun or a taser and fell to his knees and kind of like had a panic attack. Now, there's been a lot of sound or a lot of talk about these creatures creating infrasound where they can put you into that state of panic as a means of getting you out of their territory.
Wow. I've never heard of anything like that. Of course, well, actually, I have. That elephants do similar things, but it's mostly for communications.
Yeah, over long distances. Elephants are a great example. Alligators, too.
Yeah, dolphins. Yeah, dolphins use that to stun their prey. So that's
called communication. That's what the dolphins are using.
Well, hey, are you feel like you're up for some questions from some of our guests out there?
Bring it on.
Bring it on, man.
Bring it on. Let's talk.
All right. We've got Bill Green, it looks like Connecticut Bigfoot, so I'm going to go ahead and put him on, and here he comes. So, Bill, are you there? Hello?
Hello. He says he's still on the line.
All right, let's try it now. I just re-hit it. Bill, are you there?
Yep, I'm right here.
Hey, welcome
aboard. Yay! Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
Good.
Any recent sightings in your state or footprints or strange screams?
In which state?
Wherever you guys are from.
I'm in Washington State myself. We've had over 800 sightings of Bigfoot. In fact, I posted up on my blog site that I am forming a posse to head up to, we're going to go out to LaPush, and I'd also like to head down by Mount St. Helens to the, to Skookum. Yeah.
Yeah, and California, I know we have quite a bit. There's on our website, there's a link to some of the sightings lists out there. I'm not aware of anything recent in our particular area where I'm at in the Sierra Nevadas, but I do know that up in the Eureka area, there's an awful lot of activity there, so who knows? Get out there and take a look. And
have you guys got any recent photos or possible video footages of Sasquatches?
I don't personally.
Go out and look on the link on our website, on the GRI website. I posted a link there with all sorts of recent photos and case activity. So, you know, you'll see it all out there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nothing new happening in Connecticut as far as Bigfoot's concerned. New England, I see on certain sites, you know, like BFRO, and there's some reports and stuff. But I don't know. Connecticut, I think, is still a very low state for sightings. You know, I had my sighting a couple years ago, and it was a freeze frame experience. I was looking out my living room window, and I saw this creature walking on the railroad tracks, and I was just astonished. I was like, my God, you know. It was a freeze frame experience. The creature was 5.5 feet tall. It was black hair all over its body. It had a round head. You know, I couldn't see its face, and it knelt down as if looking at something and stood up and walked toward the road, and then walk across the road and down the railroad tracks again. That's all I saw of the animal, and you know, it really touched me. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I felt honored to actually see this animal.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it, you know, it doesn't bit surprise me that, you know, actually on the BFRO website in the recent report section, I always see reports from Washington State and stuff, and you know, a lot of new ones, so it doesn't surprise me that, you know, there's sightings still in that area and stuff. And
well, you know, I have some logger friends that work for Weyerhaeuser out here, and they see them all the time. They just don't talk about it because it's part of their job.
Oh yeah.
But there's not one logger up here that can't tell you a Bigfoot story about running into one or seeing one or hearing them scream because they're cutting down the trees. But it's just part of working up there.
That's a very good point. I think, you know, that's why there are some more aggressive sightings, because we are, you know, encroachment. We are cutting down their homes, and there's very, you know, I mean, there's a lot of land out there still, but ones that like a particular area will defend it.
Are you guys going to be putting any photos or videos of possible Bigfoot evidence on Facebook or soon for other people to see? Or?
Well, when we go out on our expedition now, we're going to head down into the Skookum Meadows, where there's been a lot of sightings. And if I get any evidence, we're definitely going to be posting it up, but we're not going to do that till the spring. Because I have a theory that they migrate through here, and they're up there. Most of the sightings will occur right around the springtime into the early summer around here, anyway. So, you know.
Yeah. What about in Minnesota? Are you going to put any reports? Reports or photos or videos on Facebook or anything?
As soon as the software starts working again, we're going to be. I mean, tomorrow, Bill, we're going to be going on an expedition. With a bunch of guys, you know, I shouldn't say a bunch of guys, a couple of my team members and a couple of other researchers here in Minnesota. You might even know of the one called The First Billy Jack on YouTube.
Yeah, actually, I know a few people on the Minnesota website. I go on their forum all the time.
I'm not talking about Minnesota Bigfoot. I'm talking about YouTube, the guy known as the first Billy Jack. His name is Ed Welch.
I think I know him.
I'm going to be going out with him, two other researchers by the name of Squitch and Monster Quest. And it's going to me and two other of my team members are going to go out to a wildlife preserve in part of Minnesota, going to research, and Ed's going to show me the area where he has had a figure on videotape, a dark figure walking in the woods somewhere, along with some good, you know, as he mentioned, tree breaks or tree snaps as well. So we will be bringing on video cameras.
I'm looking forward to Monster Quest next Wednesday. Snow Beast Slaughter, I think it's called, or whatever. Colorado Bigfoot, whatever. But it's supposed to be a great new segment.
Yeah, I'm kind of anxious to see it myself.
Well, I'll let you guys go and let Smiter go on the line with you guys and continue listening to the show.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being
Thanks
on.
Thanks for calling there, in, man. Have a good one.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, well, we're coming up on the top end of the 9 o'clock hour here, so we're going to just go ahead and take a brief break, give everybody a chance to grab some water and, you know, do whatever they got to do.
Go pee.
I was trying to say it nice, but give everybody their chance to take care of the bio break.
Oh, hell, you know me, John. I'll just say it.
Yeah, Ben, just look outside to see if anything big and 9 foot tall is looking in, listening to the show, you know. And Queen Mary, I'm just going to invite any spirits who are interested in doing something other than haunting the place, come on into this room and get in and on the action on our show. So that, I'm going to play another little gem of a song I found, which I think you'll get a kick out of. So here we go, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Well, you left Georgia riding in your Cherokee into Blue Ridge National Park. You stopped for drinks with the bulky brunette that you met in the dark. Ooh, and when you wake up in the morning with your hair on fire and your tied face down from a tree, you know it's no urban legend, the same thing happened to me. 'Cause she turned out to be a Bigfoot creature. You should have known from how she growls. She's definitely a Bigfoot creature. 'Cause your limbs are all yanked out. You had to take the last call last night. That will teach you to get clout. You thought you'd met a tall babe, not quite. You hooked up with a Bigfoot last night. Oh no. No! So you went chasing tail on the Blue Ridge Trail, 'cause the women seemed aggressively game, like the Chattahoochee mama with fangs who just grunted her name. Ooh, but now you just don't remember all the things she did, and you ask why it hurts when you cough. I'll give you one hint, buddy, your Jeep ain't all she ripped off. No, 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 you didn't believe in Bigfoot, did ya? She seemed abominably endowed, undoubtedly a Bigfoot creature. Her perfume was rainbow trout. You almost had your last right last night. Got that washed into the ground. You're covered with the rug burn shag type. You hooked up with a Bigfoot last night. Oh, no.
Oh, so, baby, have you ever considered laser hair removal? Or they're always waxing. Or, you know, you could always just borrow my razor and you'd be...
What'd you think? I had to dig to the bottom of the barrel to find all this. You better be happy with me.
I'm gonna cry.
Was that good or what?
You're so funny.
Oh, God. Hair removal kits. Okay, yeah, it'll work.
I've had dates like that.
Yeah, me too. To say, oh no, but my goodness.
Don't look at me.
No, no, not you. But
no.
You know, oh, that but was great. Hey, this is really turning out to be pretty cool. The thing that is the music's even great too. As far as how long have you been interested in all of this? To our guest here.
Well, I guess, you know, I've always been interested in primates all my life. My parents used to take me to a St. Paul zoo called Como Zoo, and they've always had a gorilla exhibit, and ever since I was a little kid, that would always be my favorite place just to hang out and observe the gorillas. And, you know, as I got older and time went on, Bigfoot sightings popping in and out of the, you know, newspapers and on TV. I kind of, you know, went from primates over to Bigfoot, I guess, and just got older and just been doing my homework on it and research and whatnot. And I guess, you know, in a way, it's always kind of been a part of me. I've always been kind of scared of it because of the gorillas and thinking, you know, after seeing the gorillas, wow, whether there's something that is a primate that is walking on two legs. And the one that really, you know, kicked it off for me was the Patterson and Gimlin film back in 1967, the one that everybody knows is notoriously known for. So I guess that's where it all started off with me, was just seeing that picture of that still picture and the movie of that female Sasquatch walking down there in the creek back on October 20th of 67. And I guess you can say I, you know, officially got started researching back in 2001. And, you know, like I said, that's when I got a couple of my buddies interested in it, and we went to Ohio. And lo and behold, the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team was created.
That's awesome.
Well,
it's always good to talk to people in different parts of the country, because I'm so spoiled up here in Washington, you know, with all that. We've had over 800 credible sightings in the state, and from here pretty much down through California is where you mostly would hear about these sightings. So it's really exciting for me to talk to people in different parts of the country that have had experiences with this thing.
Yeah, I hear you there. One of my team members here, it was, I want to say, around 2003.
Mm-hmm.
We were up in a place called Hinckley, Minnesota, and we were just riding around on four wheelers, and he was ahead of us and went down this one road, and in broad daylight, this creature walks out from his mouth in broad daylight and crosses the road. It's probably around seven to 7.5 feet tall. It was like in reddish brown fur, or hair, I should say, and it was around 2 to 2.5, 3 inches long, hanging off its body. And he stopped his four wheeler at that time, and he says, "Hey, you know, I just seen one. It just crossed the road." I said, "Are you sure it wasn't a bear?" He goes, "Do they walk on two legs?" And I was like, "No, they didn't." And so we went towards the area, you know, to see if we could see anything. But it was kind of a dry time of the year up here in Minnesota for that, so we did not see any footprints, and nor did we even smell any, you know, any smell, I guess, that the Sasquatch or Bigfoot, if you may, emit when you're supposed to see them, or else when they're trying to warn somebody off. I totally believed him at that time, because, you know, he looked, you know, when you see a Bigfoot, you can tell somebody's telling the truth. Because their eyes are big, and the pupils are a little dilated from the adrenaline rush, and they have that seriousness about them, about what they've seen, and it was just really awesome. And then right then and there, I knew we had another member for the research team.
You know, we get the same thing with people who have seen apparitions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
When they're telling you what they've seen is real, it's that peculiar look of, you got to believe this, you know. I was since you're going out on this expedition tomorrow,
what sorts
of techniques and methods do you use when you do go out?
Tomorrow I will be doing call blasting. That's where we have recorded Bigfoot vocalizations playing over a speaker into the woods, turned up really loud, hopefully in hopes to get a response or kind of call these creatures in closer to you or bring them all the way in closer to you, get them curious enough, build their curiosity up where they want to know where that sound came from, that it's a familiar sound, and that, we can get them hopefully on videotape evidence or a digital video recorder evidence as well, get that recorded. We also will be doing some tree knocking. I have a little Louisville Slugger baseball bat, hit it up against the tree, and that thing kind of, it gives off a pretty good echo. And that's what a technique that they use to communicate is wood knocking and also stone knocking against each other. So we're also going to go out there and do those sounds in hopes to get a response or bring them in closer or close enough, I should say, to get some, visual evidence. And, and whatever we'll find, I will be posting on our MySpace webpage. So you definitely might want to check it out maybe sometime tomorrow evening. And just see what we have found and just hop in now and here and there and just say hi.
Okay.
We have Crypto Corner on the line, too.
Yeah, I've got, I see that. I was just going to bring it up. I'm going to go ahead and pull that person in.
I just wanted to ask you something.
You're
on the
air,
if I could. Oh.
Just a sec. You're on the air, caller.
Hello, this is Henry, also known as HBM's Crypto Corner in the chat.
Hi, Henry!
Hello!
Hello, Henry. Welcome aboard. Welcome to GRI.
Welcome aboard.
You're on, dude.
I've actually had a couple of sightings 14 years apart in Mississippi. Well, first in Georgia, then in Mississippi.
Wow!
Okay.
First one, I saw the face of it, and I was actually establishing a bit of communication with it by doing a whistling cry or call with it for about 10 minutes or so, and then I actually it actually came up under a porch light. It was about what time was that? About 10:30, 11 o'clock at night Eastern time, and. I saw it standing there. It was just looking at me. It had kind of a strangely human-like face, and it was a rust brown color. I remember that. I didn't see any features, as far as what gender it was, but I did see the face of it. It stood there looking at me for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then I went back in the house. That was about a distance of 50 yards away, and that was 1984. January. And then January 1998, I was coming home from Greenville, Mississippi, which is about 30 miles south of here, and I saw something about 150 yards ahead of me cross the road, and it walked in a very smooth motion, almost like a cross-country skier.
Yeah.
When I got up to the point to where it had crossed the road, it was just standing there in a ditch, and it didn't even look at me. I saw it from the side profile, and it never looked at me. It just stood there, and it was kind of a dirty white color, almost a gray color.
Hmm.
And both of them were about 7.5-8 foot tall. And now, this second sighting lasted like 15 seconds, but I could see the muscles in its back as I passed it. I was in a car, and I could see these massive muscles. I mean,
wow.
If that was a person in a suit, that would have had to have been a skin-tight suit because this sucker was huge.
Good Lord.
And I've had several encounters, not actual sightings, but several encounters since then, as far as not actually seeing anything, but like hearing it or knowing it was in the area or finding tracks and things like that. I found tracks a few times.
Yeah,
but,
I had the experience in the Sierra Nevadas fishing on the west branch of the Feather River, where I would feel something watching me, and my mother tried to tell me it was a cougar, and this felt like a man watching you, an intelligence watching you, and it was just curious. And the thing was, is it was dark and moving on the other side of the river, and you could see this shape moving, but you could never quite make it out what was checking you out. And that happened to me twice in my teenage years, and I never forgot that. So I know what you're talking about. It's just it's very unnerving, you know, knowing that something's out there watching you, just moving through, and you can't tell what it is.
Oh, so. my uncle had an experience like that when he was young. When he was a young man, he had an experience with something. He said it was stalking him. Something was walking when he would walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it would stop when he would stop.
Yeah, and that seems to be. It seems like that. I guess that's a common primate response to, you know, something like that. Being able to, you know, just use cover and then. Just do what it's doing. Elusive one, is that something that is common with, you know, the great apes as you know it?
I'm sorry, I was paying more attention to the chat room than I was to Henry.
Oh, sorry about that.
Was the question again, Henry?
Yeah, what I was asking was, with these creatures that are reputed to be tracking people and they're hiding and moving from tree to tree and then just standing there, just out of range of a human being being able to identify them. That's pretty. Is that also something that like gorillas and other apes tend to do?
Gorillas and other apes, I would have to say no. They're not as shy as Bigfoot or Sasquatch is. When you see like on the Discovery Channel and you go out and they're out in Sumatra and they're videotaping the orangutans. You could walk within a certain amount of feet of a orangutan and they'll not try to get away. Gorillas, they'll charge you in the wild. And if you stay on the ground, they'll just, you know, make a lot of ruckus in front of you, and then they'll basically turn away or turn back as far as the silverback leaving the pack. So I would have to say, in other apes, no, that is not common. But as far as Bigfoots, that is very common for them to hide out of sight just in the tree line or behind a lot of foliage, a lot of brush, to hide themselves so they can see you, but you hardly see them.
Okay.
And my uncle also said that he got screamed at by something. He said it was panthers, but there's no panthers around here. I don't know if it was bobcats or what. He never actually saw anything, but when he was a young man, he came home and he told his daddy, that was my grandfather, he said, I was getting screamed at by panthers out there in the woods. And my grandfather was like, no, it wasn't panthers. There's no panthers out there.
Oh, my God.
But my grandfather, he hunted these woods all his life, too. You know.
Well, we've got roughly, we're coming up on 17 minutes from the end of the show, and I've got one more caller in, so I wanted to thank you for calling in.
Yeah, no problem.
Telling us that story, and I'll just go ahead and follow in on the chat room, and we'll go.
Yeah, thanks for calling, man.
Right.
Hey, you're welcome.
Ahead.
Okay. My pleasure. Take care, guys. Later.
You
take
too.
Care. Okay, we got a new caller here from area code 304. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Nancy 1WV.
Hi,
hey,
Nancy.
Nancy.
How are
Hello,
you?
Nancy. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, I've been wanting to call in, and I was just giving Abe some support. Him and my buddies are all going out there tomorrow. I got to talk to him on a computer, but never online or anything. I mean,
woo-hoo.
On the phone or anything. So, hi, Abe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Good.
I'm so excited about your trip tomorrow. I can't wait to see some good pictures and stuff.
Well, you are not the only one. Yeah, and hopefully we'll be bringing back a lot of good visual evidence. And hopefully a lot of, vocal evidence as well. But, you know, one thing that we all would like to hopefully get is a good plaster cast. I mean, that's just every researcher's dreams, that they can find that perfect cast for themselves and have a good picture that says, here, look, I mean, that's not a blob squatch. That is that you can make it out, a very, I guess I want to say, defined picture of a good Sasquatch.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
DNA samples,
I'm telling you, where we were at the other day up in Salt Fork, I was on one side of a picnic area, and my husband was on the other side, and what we heard was in between us. So the creature must have saw my husband and ran up, and I wished that somebody was up there on the top, because it had to go in that open area because it ran onto my side. Mm. And there would have been a perfect video opportunity for somebody up there if we were up there just videoing or pictures, anything. But that was the only way that it could have made it over, and the footprints we got came up and headed right toward the park area.
Wow. Is that when you were videotaping in the nighttime?
Yeah, that's where we got bluffed. What did you call that, a bluff attack?
Yeah,
bluff charge?
Bluff charge.
Yeah, we were up there the other day, and, you know, we're whooping and screaming because somebody told us, a well-known person was telling us that they were up there, and they said, oh, you got to go over there, and so we did. Well, we left, and we went over there, and we're hooting and hollering and doing all that stuff, and it came running up toward us, and it just stopped. If it was a bear or something else, you would think that it would go for the attack or something, but it came to the wood line, at the edge of the wood line, and it just stopped. It didn't come any farther.
And
I don't know why a bear or cougar wouldn't do that. They would attack you.
Yeah, they wouldn't stop, that's for sure. They would keep on attacking, and so that right there, you know, I mean, I'm pretty sure from your research yourself, Nancy, that would tell you that you had an encounter.
You know, it kind of makes you not afraid of them in a way, because it's almost like they're warning you, but they're not going to harm you. Because if they were going to hurt us as much as we're in there, and we keep going back to that area, you can't keep us away. On his days off, we're up there now. We are up in that one area, and every time we go there, there's voices, there's something there every single time, and you feel like you're getting stalked. And in the one video that I had, clip 18 on my YouTube, the new ones I just posted up there.
Yep, watched it.
Yeah, you see I freeze. It might be clip 19, because I'm showing you a path, and I just freeze. You see me, I freeze. It looks like I turned the camera off, but I'm not. I froze, completely just froze, because I had that feeling like something's watching me. And then I heard crunch, 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 and I thought my husband was walking over to me, and it wasn't him.
That's when it ran from where
he was and ran over to me. That's where it was. That's when it ran across the picnic area over toward me.
Nancy, we'd like to get hold of some of the links to those videos. Do you think maybe we could get into contact with you later on?
You know what? Yeah, that's fine. I am so stupid when it comes to picking up a link and doing it on there, but my name, no matter where I am on YouTube, Facebook, anywhere, I am Nancy1WV. So if you look me up, you can get to my links that way.
Nancy,
or if you go to, if you go to Abe's, he's got me on his friends, so you can pick me up through him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Nancy1WV and then Bigfoot, and that ought to find it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll put some links out, you know, to match up with this on our site.
Right, you can look up, like, Chased in the Dark, and that will take you right directly to my one video, and then you can get my link from there.
Hey, Nancy, I was going to ask, did you have a night vision on your video camera?
No, we don't have any equipment other than, I never even had a camcorder until we saw this thing, and then we went out and bought a camcorder, and we went out, and we're just now buying our stuff, because we never had an encounter before, and it was February 9th is when we had our encounter, and it was 50 feet away from us on the road. It was standing there on the hillside, just standing there. That's the one that's
what did
like.
It look?
What
did it look like?
To me, I didn't get to see its face, because the way it was standing was kind of like sideways, so I got to see mostly its side and its back view. That was the angle we had. But as our car passed, and I'm watching him, he didn't even look down at the car, like he wasn't even interested. He was just looking straight ahead. At first, I'm coming up, and I'm thinking, you know, that's an odd-looking tree. And then we're getting closer because it stuck out from the rest of the trees because it was brown. And as I'm getting closer, I was like, oh, my God, that can't be what I'm seeing. You know, is that real? But, of course, my mouth, I was using bad words to tell my husband, what is that? And he's looking. He doesn't see it. And I'm screaming at this point, you know, what is it? What is it? You see that? So he goes up the road. He turns the car around. He comes down, and he sees it. And as he's driving down, he's going slower. He sees it. He's got his eyes fixed on it. He almost ran in the hillside. Our tire marks are still on the right side of, or the left hand side of the road where we ran off the road, where he was staring at that thing, and he said that's got to be a moss covered tree, because at this time it wasn't standing where it was, it was actually walked up and was hugging a tree. We call him the tree hugger, you know, like in the forest where they don't want to knock the big tree down.
This is the day that marked your becoming a Sasquatch hunter.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was actually funny, and we didn't have a fear because we were safe. We were in a car. We were on the highway. He was 50 feet away from us. Don Keating said it was 50 feet away, you know, what he was telling us, because I am no good. I could tell you 1,000 feet, 2 inches. I can't measure right. Unless I have a tape measure, I can't tell you. But I guess we shouldn't go for guys' measurements because they always want to measure bigger anyway. So anyway.
Oh, that is so bad. Okay, next
caller. Sorry,
yeah, except you guys.
But anyway, that was just all there was. Well, we went a couple weeks ago or last week. We went up into that area, and we found more footprints, but you really couldn't tell if they were defined or not. But whatever it was, there was a lot of them. They were it looked like bipedal, giant footprints along a creek. We got some of those on our video on one of their it's sighting area. I think it was one of the videos was called. And we found some arches, which I believe are related to Sasquatch, and tree breaks, and it was right behind where we had our exact sighting.
Ooh.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
And there are caves, well, I wouldn't really call caves more than cubbies, where big boulders are there, but they look big enough that you could fit 2 Sasquatch in them.
Ooh.
And they needed to hide from shelter.
Yeah, I noticed that, too, in the Wayne National Forest when we were out there. There's a lot of over rock hangs where they could hide from, like, a torrential downpour or something like that.
Yeah, and they're being used because there's we found, like, coyote prints in there and other animal prints in there. So the animals are using that to sleep or for shelter or something. We found little tiny bones in here where something was eating something.
Oh, yeah. Have you found any deer mineralizations?
No, I would love to.
Those are cool. Those are good.
I would love to. I'm into all that gore. Give me anything. I'll take anything. I want anything to do with this. Now, on his days off, you can't keep us out of the woods.
Yeah,
we're there.
I hear that. Well, guys, we're closing in on the bottom of the hour, so we've got about 7 minutes left in the show. Maybe we would want to put out any website URLs that for both of you that you might want to share with the audience.
Yeah, you guys could always get a hold of me, leaving a message or sending me a message at – hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I just heard static all of a sudden. It's at www.myspace.com/MNVRT, and drop a line sometime, or else you can always mail me and or my team at Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team at yahoo.com, and I check them, you know, quite frequently and whatnot. If you have an encounter that you'd like to share with us, we will post it for you. And please do, you know, send us your encounter so we can post it for you. It's one thing that sharing information is just going to get everybody one step closer to completing the whole puzzle, I should say. And because, you know, some people just don't like to share. Some people stay to themselves. And it's going to be a longer time when people do that to get these creatures protected. So just drop us a line and share us your encounter information or your, you know, encounter, and then we'll post it up there on our MySpace page for you guys.
Yeah, I appreciate you posting my story. That's really cool.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
I'd like to get yours too, John.
Yeah, you guys be really careful out there tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, we will. It's going to be tricky getting around with crutches, though, but yeah, we're going to take some of the snowmobile trails that kind of are more packed down and stuff like that. Plus, we're supposed to get some more snow tomorrow, so that's going to be something, too.
Okay, well, hey, Elusive One, we really appreciate you representing your team, the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team. And
no,
I believe
no
it's
problem.
Nancy out there. Yeah, no problem at all. We're very glad to have you, and we'd like to have you
on. Oh, yes, thank you very much.
matter of fact, I
love these shows. You guys are great.
Oh, thank you. And you've
Matt,
been great,
we
too.
Really appreciate it, for real. You know, this is really important information for everybody to know that, you know, there's people out there that are really taking this creature very seriously, and the more evidence that we can collect and share with each other, the better off it is.
See, that's what I think, too. Everything should be shared. Don't keep it secret. Don't keep it, you know. If
that's
you have
right.
something, if somebody else, and you might have to work. Somebody might have a day off. Let them go out and try to get some more evidence.
Exactly. Okay. And Nancy, do you have any contact information that you want to share, or a website that you have?
Well, you know what? I put my, if anybody needs to get a hold of me, I put my my email address up there if anybody wants to contact me, and then I can wiggle a way to find it. My husband or my son will have to show me. I don't know how to find
okay. All right. Well, we can contact them through through Elusive One. Then he's talked with you quite a bit.
Oh yeah, we.
Yeah, we just need to keep this network going. You know, we just need to keep talking about this and sharing what we get in the field. And you know, this spring we're going to head up to the mountains again. And so, trying to get a posse together. So if anybody's interested in hanging out with us up here in Washington, you know, if you're going to head up this way, let me know.
Okay.
Yeah, I was actually up there in Yakima years ago.
Mm.
That was beautiful up in there, Yakima, and we went to Seattle and Mount St. Helens. We did a nice tour up there. It's a beautiful state.
That's right by the Skookum Meadows, and that's where we're headed.
Oh, man, I would love to go up that way.
Have fun.
Hey, Abe, to Ed. We're getting an expedition, too, at Salt Fork this summer. So talk to Ed, and when we get everything all worked out, and anybody on here is invited to go. It's an open invitation. We're
cool.
going to do a day in June, or a weekend in June, actually, and we have to get everybody together because there's a lot of people from, California
states.
That are wanting to go. So we got to
yep.
make arrangements for them and, you know, accommodate to them. Everybody else is a little closer.
Yep.
Okay.
I'd like to get back there to Ohio as soon as I can. So, yeah, we will definitely have to stay in contact, Nancy, with each other and Ed and everybody else that both of us know.
Okay. We're coming in at 3 minutes from the close of the show, so I want to thank everyone for being in. And we're looking at next week. We're going to have the New York Ghost Show. We're going to be interviewing folks that have had experiences with paranormal events in the state of New York. As a matter of fact, I met someone today on the Queen Mary who is going to be one of our guests, and we also have Sal from the Shanley Hotel who I'm talking with about being a guest on board. So, you know, definitely tune in same time, same bat channel to be with us then. And we're going to go ahead and say a big thank you to everyone that called in tonight, and we really, really appreciate you coming in and supporting the cause. Yeah, Ghost Rider Investigations is just having a blast with all of you guys, so we look forward to working with everyone here again to deal with the, especially the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team. If you guys want to come on again in about maybe a month or two, let us know, have all your evidence together, and maybe we can play some of your evidence, too, if you have sounds of the calls and things like that, so.
Yeah, hey, that would be great. Love to do that, you know, as long as the computer software will work.
Okay,
that's
right.
You
got a deal. Okay, with that said, we're going to play a little Bionic Bigfoot for you guys to close the show. So here we go, and thank you, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.